April 22, 2020. It's the Wife of Pedro show.
That's what I want to do.
Offer Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Miracles. We got Brother Matt and myself in quitting quarantino mode 3 miles away here in Pedro. Trying to devise a way to get him on board. We're working on that. I know I can get him on Spiel Park, but he's finding a way to make his own spin cycle. So bear with us, people. But in the meantime, I am not man alone in my patio because of the miracle of them engineers in Estonia with their Skype software. I got Jason Boardman with me from Knoxville.
Welcome. Hey there, everybody.
Yeah, welcome aboard, Jason. You were just saying, we were talking off-air people on stuff, and one of it was he's digging all the Knoxville people on the Watt for Pedro show.
Yeah, yeah, it's been really great. I love it that you're digging deep and getting
you know,
to
I do
talk
have
a lot
connect.
Of the great Knoxville people.
I have a deep connect. First with Cap Childers, and then after that, Larry Mullins, two Knoxville cats that no longer live there.
Oh, yeah, Larry.
But they go way back, right? Jim and,
right.
Who's Deli? Jim and, no,
Vic and Bills, maybe?
Vic and Bills.
I definitely, that was before my time of actually living here, but, you know, certainly when I first got here and started.
We're going to get into that, Jason. We're going to get into
that. Yeah, okay.
But, you know, it's been a big vol town, right? Long time.
Oh, yeah, that's inescapable.
Okay, and I think in the way the Vic and Bill, I saw it happen in Athens, Georgia, too, with the Wux Tree and the, you know, Bulldog. Sometimes it breeds a reaction, sort of like the way manure works with farmers, you know.
Right.
Anyway, I should tell people we started the show off with John Coltrane and Miles Davis, If I Were a Bell. And then a prize you're involved with, we're going to be playing a lot this show, like Greg. Back to the Gutter.
Yes.
Yeah. Jason, tell me your earliest musical recollection, please.
Earliest musical recollection in terms of...
music.
People playing music or hearing music? Well, certainly...
Well, experience it. Like, you go back into your mind, and when this music... What's the oldest little fragment of memory? Some dudes I know, they remember shit in the cradle.
Right.
I can't remember shit.
I certainly
like
remember
four or five,
music.
But we're all different, and that's why I have people on the show, because I've yet to find one musical journey the same as somebody else's. Oh, by the way, I got to give, you were asking about this deep Knoxville thing besides those two old connects. I've got a more recent connect with Mike Begetta, so we got to thank him.
But oh, anyway, absolutely.
Reach down deep and pick out that fragment, that earliest musical. I mean, there's no wrong answer here, Jason.
Right. Well, I definitely especially on my mom's side of the family, they were all real musical and still are. And records and the radio were playing in the house. I do remember like my mom playing records as early as being in my crib. And and my grandmother was a piano performer and piano teacher, not, you know, more just sort of locally and through church and putting on she would put on plays and stuff in town. And so I got exposure oddly, like to musicals and type stuff like that, probably at the earliest, period, but, definitely, lots of music from the 60s and 70s being played on records around the house, but not a whole lot of like rock and roll. That came later for me on my own, finding that, and you know, and actually playing music came a little later for me, because I kind of resisted that at first. I guess I had the opportunity to take lessons on piano and wish I had, but didn't at the time.
Let me get into that, because to me, music's music. I mean, you can call rock and roll or church music, whatever the fuck. They're probably connected somewhere in
I agree.
God's mind. I know with the marketing people, they want genres, they want to reinforce that, they want to make their job easier.
I couldn't agree. Yeah, more. Definitely. It's okay. All the same.
So I'm curious, in the pad, you're talking about your grandma with the piano. Was there a piano in the pad?
Yeah, there definitely was a piano in almost every house I grew up in.
Did you bang on it? You said you didn't get into the lesson thing, but did you bang on it?
I definitely have had an even longer relationship with sounds and noises and things. So, yeah, I would bang on anything that made sounds, noises, and any instrument that any of my brothers got a hold of. It seems like my brothers all got instruments for Christmas and things, and I was being sort of shepherded in a different direction, I guess. But, I would always grab their stuff.
I should say, were they older?
I have two younger brothers and one older brother. So this would have been, and the younger.
So you're like the baloney.
Definitely the baloney.
Scotty told me that.
Maybe more like the cheese.
Because Kathy and Ronnie, you know, he said one time his mom said, Scotty, you're kind of like the baloney. Because
yeah.
They call that too on the airplane, the baloney seat, right? It's the one everybody wants.
Right.
But, okay, so these guys, they're into music. They get instruments. They start learning. What about school? Were you in the choir or were you in the marching band or shit like that?
I wasn't. I was a really shy kid and kind of the idea of performance was something that intrigued me, but I didn't have the guts to get involved with. Although I was sort of pushed into doing some like church plays when I was really young, where I would sing in front of a crowd, and I had no idea how I ever did that, but it happened.
Well, you were pushed into it. That's
yeah.
How you did it.
Yeah, and I'm glad about it, and certainly, but I wasn't in band, and I didn't have any music lessons, but I was absolutely.
I'm curious because a lot of schools they cut the program. Was there a program?
There definitely was a program.
Okay.
I was lucky even in a small town.
Yeah, where was this, Jason?
This was in Athens, Tennessee. That's pretty much the town I grew up in my whole formative years of childhood. There was a couple of stints in one in Knoxville for about a year, but most of it was Athens, Tennessee.
Okay, nothing at school. In the house, there's a piano, but you don't play it. What about the stuff where you're with your buddies after school, like in junior high and high
yeah.
school, where you've got the basement or the bedroom or garage band?
Right. Well, I was already pretty sure I wanted to play drums from like probably age 7 or 8. Like I was already banging around on boxes and pillows and stuff with. I used to take the cardboard tubes off of coat hangers and drum with those on pretty much anything I could find. And so yeah, as soon as I got a hold of a cassette recorder that I could tape with, I remember making, I don't know what I was thinking, but just making like song type things, singing along, making fake radio interviews, just doing fun stuff like that with my friends. Like, and then as we got a hold of Casio keyboards, we started doing stuff, but it wasn't very structured, like trying to make songs or anything. We didn't really have a band. I didn't have a band or anything like that growing up. It's a really odd musical development compared to most people who play an instrument. Cause I didn't play in a band for a really long time, but I'd already been playing drums for many years before that. So it was kind of strange.
Okay. I should ask you, what was the first record you bought for yourself?
Oh, the first one I got for myself, other than just taping stuff off the radio is I remember, do you remember Future Shock by Herbie Hancock being a
sure.
big, splash. I remember going to a tape store or getting taken to a tape store to buy that, and that was the first one. I had some stuff that I had, you know, put two boom boxes facing each other and taped off some of my brothers and tapes before
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's different when you're spending your own money, so that's why I'm curious. And what was the first
yeah.
gig you went to?
Well, the first actual concert I ever saw was a pretty amazing big one, and it was when I was I guess I probably would have been around 10. It was the Jackson 5 Victory Tour when
oh.
the family got back together, and it was in like Neyland State, the big football stadium here in Knoxville. My dad had gotten tickets somehow and sent us with a friend to see that. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, wow. I wish I would have saw it. I want to play a sci-fi song.
Okay.
Excavation requires evaluation. Thank you. Maybe we've found a way off in this dying rock. What mistakes? I got something in place. He stopped their hope. They've been crafted not well. Calling back to their bones. They were buried in rocks. Calling down to their bones. They were buried.
That's enough for an annoying quizzical nature. Troubled by questions pertaining to destiny and his place in the universe, etc.
Oh, yeah. Safe sex drill. The child held the old TP roll. Carefully, thoughtful not to misshape the hole.
Pedro Show? Yeah, we heard White Greg with Sci-Fi Song, then Gareth Sager out of London with Solid Air, Bilge Pump out of Leeds, Observe My Crazy Arms, some England stuff. Trotsky Ice Pick, yeah, the last tune from their new album, Celebrity Skronk. Great singer, man, John Jones and Tally Jones, and Kel on the guitar, and they go way back. Minutemen used to do Urinals, Act, yeah, we only did three acts because we cut out a verse. Or extract from Canada after that happenstance. There's the Mark Group, the band he had before this one, John Maloney, Keith Wood, and what was that lady's name? She plays good bass here. Instant Transcendent Conjecture. South London with Signor Al Dios y David Diablo Dios, and the Sea, Crushed by Pimps, right near them, from the same area. Social Conscious. Bell out of Barcelona with Sagrado Corazon. Safe Sex Drill from Captain Beefheart, a little poetry there in his, I think he'd given up music by then. Finally, White Greg, William Shatner. I thought if we were going to do sci-fi songs, we should do William Shatner.
Definitely.
That guy's too much. But, you know, that's really the only one I like is that first one with those. I mean, they had characters, you know. They might have had scripts later, but they didn't have any characters. Yep. Okay, back to your music journey there, Jason. So in high school, junior high, you just had some jam, keyboard, and drum. When did you get your first trap set?
My first actual drum set, I got probably when I was around 14. It was just an absolute piece of junk, but I bought it off my neighbor who was a drummer in the marching band and stuff. And it was, I don't even think it had a brand name. It was like a gold sparkle thing. It was, but it was fantastic for me. And I played it just mostly by myself, listening to records and stuff for years through the rest of high school.
Like
I guess that would have been ninth or
in the bedroom?
Yeah, yeah.
And the parents, they were cool?
Yeah, my mom loved the racket, like, or
the
just loved the fact
bam,
that
bam.
Yeah, for sure. She had no problem with it.
Yeah, I've mostly. Actually, there's a, on YouTube.com, you can go find Elvin Jones has this little half-hour documentary, A Different Drummer. And he talked about starting off on the fucking pots and pans and shit.
Oh yeah, I was playing on pillows and boxes before that.
Yeah, but you're
that.
Cool that you were using the cardboard tubes. He was talking about using fucking spoons and shit.
The cardboard tubes were probably a later innovation. I was probably using anything I could find before that. I used to drive people crazy, tapping my feet.
Okay, but then the keyboard guys. Your buddies with keyboards come over, and you. So you're doing both. You're doing drumming, or did you drum to them keyboard?
Well, you remember like in the '80s when like little cheapo electronic keyboards and drum machine pads. Just sort of they were like almost like toys, but they were available. So my best friend, childhood friend Ryan, and I, who just sort of we used to make cassette tapes all the time. So he would bring over whatever toys and stuff he had, and he had access to a bass and I had my drum set and I had a bunch of little electronic, I was into electronics. So I built like things that made beeps and noises and we would just play around, but we didn't really know much about how to write a song or anything like that. So they're pretty abstract.
Well, what you do, you got a groove going on the drums? Did you have a little table there with your electronics?
Yeah, it was never, it was really kind of sprawling. Like, yeah, I would definitely try and play beats and stuff with my drums. And when I was playing by myself, I would do things like that. But when we would play together, it was really, I guess later it would have seemed like thoughtful improv, but it really wasn't that thoughtful. It was just making noises and seeing what noises we could make. Since neither of us really had any music lessons, we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants.
Right. Yeah. And but you never thought about joining a band. Like your buddy, it was just good enough to jam the records and jam with your buddy, right?
Right. Again, I didn't really like. And Athens is a really small town, and my recollection of it, like, I'm sure there must have been local bands doing stuff, but there was no like central place to go and see a band. I'm sure there were house shows, but again, I was a really shy kid, and like, yeah, I loved the idea of playing in a rock band or playing in any kind of band, but I didn't really know how to make it happen at that time. And I were kind of in the same boat there. So we were just making, we loved music and collected, like listened to music constantly, but like, we didn't really know where to begin in terms of starting a band. So that came, it was strange to, I played drums for probably 6-7 years before I ever played in a band. So I learned drums really strange. Like I never really learned how to take care of business as a drummer, driving a band. I was always playing along with records and stuff in my head, so I would always, the drums were already sort of taken care of, so I was coming up with rhythms and stuff that were working against or in addition to those things. I think that it really helped me develop an interesting style, but it made it tough when I finally started playing with people who expected, you know, just to the drummer to glue everything together. That wasn't me in the beginning. Maybe still not me.
So, but let's say after high school, did you go to college?
Yeah, the one time I lived in a big city was Chicago. I went up there to go to college for, I was only there for a couple of years, down on the South Side, and I was studying physics, and it really...
Oh, physics. But did did the music sit, did you kind of put it on hold for that time?
No, some like pieces of my drum set, because I didn't know what my living situation was going to be, so that I could just keep playing around, because I just couldn't not do it. And I certainly, once I got to Chicago, I was still pretty young, so I couldn't get into a lot of clubs, but I was going to record stores almost every, you know, few days. And it's probably the reason I was only in school for a couple of years up there, as I was spending a lot of time exploring the city and music and anywhere I could find it. That's really what drew me to the place.
Did you get to play with Chicago musicians?
No. This is when I was, you know, 17, 18, 19, and still, I happened to choose a university that had zero art and music program, which was really bad. It was definitely a science and tech school, and it was kind of on that side of the creative spectrum, really kind of a dismal experience. And I remember really, I made some friends with some kids at a music school that was nearby and got access to their drums and their keyboards, luckily, but still I wasn't playing with people until I came back to Tennessee.
Okay. And what happens? You join your first band?
Yeah, I ended up moving to Knoxville and falling in with, got a job at a bookstore and met some people who were playing in bands and started going out to see them play in these really, tiny places that they had local bands and fell in with them. I started like recording shows, like taking my tape decks to shows, and then I ended up joining two bands kind of around the same time, one playing synthesizer and like this sort of drone band, and one playing drums with a band called Dark Logic with Eric Lee, who I ended up playing music with for like the next almost 20 years. He's in, you know, one of the guitarists in White Craig and the person who put that band together.
Wow, so that was, okay, that's the beginning of that relationship. That's great.
Yeah.
Dark Logic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was the first Dark Logic gig like for you?
I was very, very nervous. This was like my first time. These were all guys in the band who had been playing music in bands since they were in high school. Yeah. And I was, you know, like in my early 20s at this point and still hadn't played in front of people. And we played... I'm trying to remember what the actual first show. I think it was actually, strangely, in a like a hotel venue in Chattanooga that was like real, like in a ballroom that was really kind of nice. I just remember. Actually, that probably wasn't the first. It was probably I'm really bad with dates and names, but that was maybe one of the first where I wasn't playing in just front of friends, and I remember being really nervous about that one, but you know.
Yeah, we call them pants shooters.
That would qualify as that.
I still have them.
Wow.
Yeah,
really?
I was not a born entertainer, but I was lucky. I got, because you play with guys that are like that, and it helps you. You know, they might have it naturally, a charisma thing, or just, you know, balls out, whatever. And that kind of is infectious, and that's how it was with me and D Boone. You know, Ed from Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah, it's comforting to hear you still struggle with that at times.
All the time, but I mean, I'm just being honest. I mean, some dudes are balls out. Bob Mould, you know, that guy's never afraid. Yeah, you know, fucking egg, he ain't afraid.
Oh, right.
But sometimes you're serving with those guys, it brings something out of you that without them you don't have. It's not like you're dick leeching on them, but. For damn sure they're throwing you a rope.
I definitely get an odd adrenaline courage when I finally get up there, which I really like, and, you know, found that happened pretty early on.
Hodge plays drums in the MSV, an SV project Mike Begetti. He, when I was doing the first opera with him, I was scared shitless. This wasn't even a gig. It's in the studio.
Wow, yeah.
Because, you know, look what, being a little bit scared is like being a little bit excited.
It's true.
We're at the end of the first hour, April 22, 2020. Hold tight for hour two. April 22, 2020. It's the second hour. Watch for Pedro Show.
For way too long, baby, you made me feel so bad, honey. You're the best thing I've ever had. Oh, tell me if you love me. Tell me if you love me. Tell me if you love me. Otherwise, watch me go. You. I thought I knew you, baby, but I don't know you no more. Try to find a way to do you, so you won't do that to me no more. Your heart's a well of secrets, never to be told. Come on and face the music, baby, before we get too old. Tell me if you love me. Tell me if you love me. I wanna know if you really love me, baby. Otherwise, watch me go.
There's just never enough time for righteous ways. And in my slumber I have dreams of broken waves and dogs of thunder. Wake up to another year of tortured days. I am a pilgrim, I'm a drifter, I'm a gypsy, I'm a fool. I never hear a thing that people say. Blind man, double dealer, I'm a cripple, I'm a liar. I just don't have the time for righteous ways. Thank you. time in my mind and in my heart. There's just never enough time for righteous ways. And in my slumber I have dreams of broken waves and dogs of thunder. Wake up to another year of tortured days. I am a pilgrim, I'm a drifter, I'm a gypsy, I'm a tool. I never hear a thing that people say. Blind man, double dealer, I'm a cripple, I'm a fool. I just don't have the time for righteous ways. I just don't have the time for righteous ways.
My ears.
for Peter. Our show started the second hour off with Lazy and the Tramp from White Greg. Luke Winslow King, Watch Me Go. Scott H. Burham, Righteous Ways. Guided by Voices, Windjammer. And finally, The Pleases, which you guys shared a 7-inch with, Women of Your World. Tell me about White Greg.
Well, like I was saying before, I'd been playing music on and off pretty much since the 1998 with Eric Lee, the guitarist. The band Double Muslims that we were in before that, I guess, had fallen apart. And so a couple of years later, he had been doing some stuff and I'd been doing some other things, and he started putting together White Greg with Maggie. And I can't remember.
Oh,
it's been so many.
She was on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
What's her band?
Lower Interiors. And
it's something for that. With the fucking her teeth.
Right.
She's great, man. All you cats in Knoxville, I love what you're doing.
So, yeah, Maggie's got a deep streak of influence.
She already's
in
got
stuff.
A band. By the way, what happened to Ryan?
Ryan's still around. He's a visual artist, and he does some sound art too, sound collage music.
That's great. I'm glad he's still in the ring. But anyway, yeah. You're getting together with your buddy, and he's already been playing with Maggie.
Yeah, well, the band was just in formation. I think that they were the two that were talking about it first, and then when other musicians were put in, Eric and I find our way back to playing music with each other, just because we talk really well with guitar and drums to each other, even when we are, at odds with each other or getting along. We can always do that really well. So it just ends up being a good thing.
By this time, do you have a different drum set?
Yes.
Well, you were so happy with that other one that had no name, but you loved the orange sparkle, the gold sparkle.
I really didn't love the drum set at all. I just loved that I finally had a drum set. It was problematic from like the cymbals were such crap. They would like turn inside out when you hit them too hard.
Mm. So like an umbrella in a big wind.
Yeah, exactly like that. Sometime when I came back to Tennessee after Chicago, I bought my only other drum set that I've ever had. I've only ever owned two.
Oh, that's great. You know who's like that? It's Stephen fucking Flipper. That's the same
really?
I mean, he's painted it, but it's the same fucking drums.
Yeah. It was like at a music store. It was a Sonor kit, five-piece kit.
German.
Yeah, and they were just, it was this music store in Chattanooga that had one. And they were really trying to get rid of it because I guess, I don't know, it didn't sell or something. And so it was only like $500 and I bought it, and I'm still playing it to this day and I love it. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
they're made really well.
Yeah.
So the band's already the guitar singer, but then you get involved. What about bass? Was the bass guy the last?
As a group, I mean, it didn't exist as a group as just guitar singer. They were just the two friends talking about it all happened really fast.
Okay.
The other guitarist, Tyler, and Damien on bass, that core group was the band for the whole time. The discussions, I think, started in the aftermath of whatever Eric had done right before that, and then him talking to Maggie, who had been in lots of great bands in town the whole time, so it just sort of started to fall together from that.
I want to play another thing. You're going to tell me about the Pleases, right? We're going to play the drum from them.
Tell that old electrocardiogram the news. Doc says he'll be damned, you're pulling through. You son of a bitch, you. You're gonna pull through. I swear I knew that you were there when you were barely there at all. Let the pause fireworks loose the blue fireball through the waiting room to the wailing wall. Visiting hours are over. Visiting hours.
Off of Peter's show, we're talking off air, people, about incredible genius drum designs. From just a head to something that looks like a sousaphone bell. And drummers, you know, it's always been a trip. My heart's always gone out to them. But they're the heart of the band. In fact, I've said this before, but the big mistake the Minutemen made was having George Hurley in the back there. I don't know, the last 20 years, if you see me play, I always put my drummer men in the front of the stage. That's what should have happened with George Hurley.
Yeah, I of course agree, because I was always trying to watch him.
No, but this idea that, you know, Chico Hamilton had problem in the 60s trying to get songwriting credits. There's just this prejudice against drummers.
I
think it's because they know the truth is they actually hold all the power, because it's rhythm music, you know?
Truly, and I always used to bristle, like, when I was younger, like, I would see credits, and it'd be, like, music by, and the names, and it was, like, drums, or it wouldn't even include the drummer's name, and I'm like, so that part isn't part of the music?
Yeah, bullshit.
It's like, let's hear it without it.
Bullshit. Okay, the notes don't last as long, so fucking what?
Yeah.
There's still notes. It's still rhythm. It's just so jive. Humans always like to get, they want shortcuts on the truth, it seems, so they set up these fucking hierarchies.
Well
said. They end up enslaving us. Okay, so the Pleases, right? You made this 7-inch, and that song was called The Drum. Cosmos Scheiss had a Hamburg with Not Enough Romance after that. Mega Doubt, Trieste, New World Virus, or Opium Trail. Actually, I was out of Scotland in the 60s. This cat now is living in Fraser's suburb of Detroit. Wipeout, their version of Wipeout. Yeah, they used to do that a lot in the 60s. Talk about copying records. They do it like almost as soon as it happened to Captain Beefheart with Diddy Wah Diddy, you know. Motherfuckers would put out, they compete against you. Corey Brandon after that, Visiting Hours, and finally White Greg with Heart Failure. So tell me about the Pleases in this 7-inch.
That was a split cassette that we put out. Pleases were just another band that we were like, we seemed to be sort of creatively in a good, you know, lock with. And they were, of course, friends of ours. Everybody in the scene works together a lot down here. But they were a band that we tended to play shows with. And members of that band were also in a band back called Midnight Bomber, What Bombs at Midnight. That was this crazy, bizarre, wild, hyper-fast composition-y kind of John Zorn-esque kind of stuff, but with more of a just shouty, almost like David Yao like singer, and that guy's name was Ben Euler, the singer. He played in Pleases, and we kind of always, you know, Eric and I's bands did stuff with them, and then again in White Greg, it's the same with Pleases, was what he was doing at the time, so we decided to put out that split. It ended up being the only thing they put out, I think.
Was the split before you did your album?
No, the album was quite a bit before that. The split tape is the material, the White Greg material on that is the newest stuff that ever saw the light of day. There's other stuff that, a whole set of music that we were playing post that cassette that never fully got recorded.
Well, tell me about the album. It was done, 3 years ago?
The LP? That was a long time ago. That probably was in 2015.
5 years ago.
Five, six.
Where'd you do it?
Yeah,
I'm mainly playing today.
Right. That was done at a local studio here called Wild
really good.
Forest.
Who produced it?
The guy who recorded it, his name is Scott Miner, and he just packed up his studio to move to Greece, I think. But he was in Sparkle Horse and a lot of other music. Any projects with Mark Linkus, they were really close, and they sort of decided to, I think from what he told me, they always had plans to open a studio together. He ended up moving here. Both of them ended up moving here, and Scott was more of the recording engineer guy, and drummer, and he set up that studio, and he hadn't even really finished building it yet, but he saw us play and wanted us to come record with him, so we did, and that was a really good experience working with him.
The premier project for that. What was the studio called?
It was called Wild Chorus.
Wild Chorus. How long did it take?
I believe we tracked it in, I I'm sort of remembering it, tracking it in only like a day or two. And then there was another day of guitar and vocal overdubs. And that was it. It took quite a while to get mixed just because he was kind of doing us a favor and cutting us a deal and working us in.
The performances were real quick.
Yeah, but yeah. And we, you know, came in a few months later to finalize the mix with him. And yeah.
Well, you did, both you guys did a great job. I think it sounds great. And
thanks.
The tunes were probably from you guys doing gigs, right? The first records are usually like that.
Yeah. Well, we would practice pretty relentlessly. It took us forever.
It sounds good and tight. I mean, you guys are playing sharp. Look, we're at the end of the second hour here. April 22, 2020. Dishwab Pedro Show. Special guest Jason Hope. Time for hour three. April 22, 2020. It's the third hour of the Live for Pedro Show.
Every time that I breathe, it's only I could reach. I can get some relief.
Everybody's gone. Ain't it never comfortable without something horrible. A meter set for some dark corner. Never comfortable without something horrible.
Yeah, I think the story is never bet the devil your head. It's online. You can read it. It's one of the short babies. Total damn it. Start third hour off with Drowning Song. I hadn't played the Pilot Lamp People until its fourth year. See, there was a big drought of Knoxville gigs for Watt. Like, from Vic and Bill's, I didn't play there again until I played the Pilot Lamp. And so there must have been like 5-6 years.
Yeah,
there was nowhere to play. So you could play Memphis, you could play Knoxville, you could even for a time play Murfreesboro. But even Chattanooga's tough too. You know, I've yet to play there. I heard Dick Lloyd's living there from TV.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost got asked to produce a record, and I'm glad I didn't ever get involved with that. But, you know, he's incredible. I read his book in one day. It's pretty incredible.
Wow.
Crane after that with Between Us, K. Cole's, the band he was in with Dirt, Surfing Monster, Andre Vita out of Berlin with Balinese, Ha Ha Tonka Heart, The Party, Bark out of Knoxville with Big O' Party, Dark Corner, Not Dark Logic from White Greg. So who's writing most of the songs? Maggie?
The writing process was really strange. Like, a lot of times Eric Lee would come in with a riff or some pieces of a song, and we would just beat the living shit out of it for weeks, months, sometimes a year. We wrote them truly as a band, and all of us bashing it actually, you know, the songs would go through crazy evolution, and then Maggie would be in there listening to it come together and be just sketching down lyrics, and she would add lyrics to the song as it was start, you know, getting close to where it would finish up and in its shape.
In its final shape.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, she was there for the, all of the painful construction process as it went from one thing to another. But then, yeah, she would be writing lyrics the whole time, kind of. And then I'm not sure what her process was in terms of how they ended up on what part of the song. But she was doing her part. We just didn't hear about it until she started singing over the stuff we had been coming up with.
She kind of the caboose, right? Last aboard.
Well, she was working on it the whole time, but because she's not playing a guitar or something, you don't hear it. She's just like scribbling lines,
and then
editing.
Well, that's pretty bitchy because a lot of singers, I don't have to be there during the music part. So that was great that she was there.
Yeah, definitely. Because we'd also be working on practice and stuff that we had already worked out. So we were always working on, we'd play some of the stuff we had to sharpen it up, and we'd work on the stuff that was almost there, and then we'd spend time. It sounds really disciplined the way I'm describing it, but it didn't really feel that way.
I'm wondering about, since shit was still in flux and stuff, what was it like for the gigs? That they were kind of works in progress?
We definitely played stuff at shows before it was ready and before...
Okay.
And then once the stuff was tight, we'd play it that way for a while. And then when we'd lived in it a while, there were moments in the songs where we could really fly off the handle and you know, pull ourselves back in as a sort of an unconscious. We worked really well together that way.
And when you did the album, the engineer, man, he kind of acted as a producer, or did you guys self-produce?
You know, I mean, what that means sort of changes from session to session. He didn't nudge us at all, really. He would tell us if something was off time or if something was sounding weird, but he was really, at least working with us. He's definitely done producer work with other songwriters, from what I understand. But the music that you're hearing on that album is pretty much the way that we played it straight up on stage.
Yeah, you know the example they give, right, is like that first Joy Division album. Like that,
right.
That producer man, I think it was Mark Hammett. Martin Hammett. Here's the sound I'm going to give you.
Right. No, he didn't do
like
any Mark Hannett with us. I mean,
you know,
he certainly
like,
was creative.
You sound like that at the gig or not. This is how you're going
right.
to sound on this record. Yeah.
No, there wasn't a record company behind us, like, you know, pushing.
Well,
this
I understand
is like,
that
part.
I understand that part.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
some
yeah,
people, it seems there's different approaches. Some people, they got a vision.
Yeah.
But then other times, well, you know, I'm basically here to document what you guys do.
Right,
so
I think
just different
like,
approaches, and I'm curious about it.
He works I do the same kind of thing. I try and be creative with how I record something,
yeah.
But like, you know, I try and stay true to what I think that the band is trying to do, and then I'll present them with some options, like, what if we did this, or you sound like that made this sound, and sometimes they're like, hey, that's great. Other times it's like, nah, I don't think so. And so he just certainly did creative things in the midst of recording us that some of it made onto the record and some of it, but it's a pretty, I mean, with a 5-piece rock band like that, it's everything, there's not a lot of room for, you know, to hear and understand what's going on in a band like that. That's tricky like that. It's just a really well captured, good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, another example, Alice Cooper, right? Love It to Death. And then maybe Easy Action.
Yeah.
Right. Bob Ezrin versus Frank Zappa, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
The completely
Minutemen
different.
Was always so scared, we always let the engineer man be the producer man. I want to play Slow Burner.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Thank you. I don't like that rhythm. Anyway, prostitution, move along. If you're handing a pan, move along. Anyway, you are all beautiful babies. You are all beautiful babies. Underneath the skin and bone, the spirit is your happy home. You can even high-five a guy who has had his hand on his dick. Underneath the skin and bone, the spirit is your happy home. You can even high-five a guy who has had his hand all over his dick. While pissing in the rain, if you're smelling the moment, if you're smelling the moment. Anyway, now I'll have the phrase distinctive yellow squeeze barrel stuck in my head for days. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Frank Schultz. Hey man, it could be worse. Yeah, I could be a demented Dean Martin Dustin Hoffman hybrid stumbling around looking for a cigarette that's behind my left ear. It could always be worse. I could be a demented Dean Martin Dustin Hoffman mutating hybrid stumbling around on the porch looking for a cigarette that's behind my left ear. Anyway, a buck for luck, a fuck for love. What do you give? What do you shove? When you deliver yourself from evil, do you sound like Chuck? Do you feel like corn that's about to be shucked? Do you stick the large bills in the fucking glove? I bet you do. I bet you do. When you're not getting used to the pain in your teeth by moving cold shit around your mouth. When you're not getting used to the pain in your teeth by moving cold shit around your mouth, I bet you stick the large bills in the fucking glove. I bet you feel like corn that's about to be shucked. I bet you deliver yourself from evil when you listen to Chuck. Berry. A buck for luck. A love for a fuck. What do you give? What would you give for a fuck for a buck that's in love with a schmuck that is staggering around a porch like a demented Dean Martin Dustin Hoffman hybrid looking for a cigarette that's behind his left fucking ear? It can always be worse. I could have the phrase distinctive yellow squeeze barrel stuck in my head for days. I could be smelling the moment while pissing in the rain with my arm around a guy that had his hand on his dick after high-fiving the spirit that's underneath the skin and bone. You are all beautiful babies. 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 Don't tell a prostitute to move along. Because like Maddie Love said, everyone's a whore. How dare you tell a prostitute to move along and stick a no loitering sign up their fucking dress? It was proven a long time ago in San Francisco, 1994, that everyone is a whore. Maddie Love said that. Maddie Love sang that. And then he died. A blue suicide. The cops shot him. because he was a whore, just like all of you are whores. And it's okay to be a whore if you know what you're looking for. It's okay to be a whore if you know what you're living for. It's okay to be a whore if you know what you're loving for. If you know what you're loving for. If you know you are all beautiful babies. You know you are all beautiful babies. If you know you are all beautiful babies. If you know you are all beautiful babies. If you know you are all beautiful babies. Underneath the skin and bone, spirit is your happy home. Underneath the skin and bone, the spirit is your happy home. You can go there anytime you want. You can go there anytime you want. You can go there anytime you want. And when you go there, it sounds like this.
Don't.
Well, for Pedro show, the last music for this edition, Slow Burner from White Greg. Jason, where did the name come from? Because on the album cover, everybody's wearing name tags, right?
Yeah, that was... Maggie had gotten a hold of some Greg with a just traditional one G at the end spelling, and then like sewn on a second G and made, she had gotten a stack of them given to her or something, or maybe she found them at a thrift store. I can't remember. Like, she gave us all Greg name tags.
You know who's got the two G's? He used to write reviews for Cream Magazine, played guitar in the Angry Samoans, Greg Turner.
Ah.
Yeah, he did the two G's at the end.
Yeah, the name was really just came from a joke. It was like, and one of the things, the greatest undocumented things is how much we all used to joke around. It was really, it was a funny group. But it was Tyler and Eric were talking about something, and one of them had said something, and it was misheard as White Greg. It was White something, like White Dreads or something, and he's like, did you say White Greg? And they just laughed about it, and that just ended up being the name. Okay. I mean, we had gone through, it's ridiculous, and like at some point you just got to stick with something until right. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Plant your stake so the tent don't blow over.
Right.
Okay, Lullaby of Good Consequences after that from Bradford Reed. Chinese Herbal Medicine with Get My Head Right. Bahan Boy, AJ out of Amsterdam with Universal Love. Om Fu, that's Steve Cicotti at...
oh, Steve.
Right, out of your Knoxville scene with You Are All Beautiful Babies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was great. He was on the show earlier in the week.
Right.
Or last week, and whatever it is.
Yeah, we recorded great, that stuff just... right during this pandemic, you know, the sort of isolation phase, because all the shows were getting canceled.
Yeah,
and
he's sending me two more cassettes he's just done, M&N or something, N&O.
He's unstoppable.
He's unstoppable. We need more of that. And then finally, White Greg with Black Hornet. What's next for the band?
I'm not sure there is anything next for the band. I think we haven't been playing together for a while. Kind of took it apart for a while, and I think that it might be done with, unless the skies or the grounds shift and something happens.
Well, sometimes things are like that. You know, Arthur Rimbaud, right? He only does poems a couple years.
Yeah, everybody in the group is still making music. The only people who have done stuff out and about that... As Eric has been playing, and of course Maggie's got Lower Interiors and has got other projects as well, and I've been making sort of electronic music, synthesizers and tape music for as long as I've been playing.
You gotta phone me some. I didn't get any of that.
I think I sent you some right at the 11th hour, but it was too late.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, it's pretty underdocumented.
God damn, I gotta check that. I don't know how, because all I had was White Greg. Okay,
yeah.
We got to check that. If people want to find you on the internet, where do they go?
Well, the White Greg is on Bandcamp. Palatheta is the name of my electronic thing, and there's just a tiny bit of music on there. Palatheda, bandcamp.com.
Okay.
And then I've got the Stripe Light record label, and of course
great
there's
label.
Always...
Love the fucking shit on that label. The albums on that label.
Especially that MFSD.
You gotta turn me on to that. I really love it. I hope you cats keep on keeping on, man. Truly.
Thanks.
Yeah, it means a lot to me. You know, sometimes you think you're some relic from the old days, but then you look over your shoulder and there's cats that are kicking up big time dust. Thank you so much, Jason, really. Big honor having you on. Let's come on the show again when you get an album done with this
Palatheta. Yeah.
You know, we got a place that's kind of fancy. It's called Palisades.
Yeah, definitely nothing like that.
Pacific Palisades. Anyway, thanks so much for being on. Really, Jason, it means a lot. And thanks for the pilot lamp, bitching.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Great talking to you.
People, it's been April 22, 2020. Dishwap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.